Major Hogan, reel two. Were you in much pain?
Yes, and very stiff. Left the station, and there were a whole line of ambulances there. Again, you're walking wounded, you're not entitled to get into this ambulance. But when we move off, if you stand in the back on a step about 9 inches wide, with nothing to hold on to except the water trough at the back and a number plate, and you had to grip onto this, and away we went to ambulances. There were two of us on the back of each ambulance, all of us who were slightly wounded. And I remember this driver as a nightmare, because the driver, who we afterwards found out, hadn't even passed his test, was driving at about 50 miles an hour, swerving every time he thought a plane was overhead. And we were trying to keep on the back. I can remember this. It was absolute hell. However, after quite a few stops, we got to Pimanar in central Burma. And the ambulances were due to leave next morning at 6, but they left at 4. Therefore, we were without any form of transport. We started walking north towards Mandalay. When I say we, it's about 5 of us. School friends, auxiliary force friends, and mission gun and armored car. We had stuck together. I'm not quite sure how we got to Mandalay, but we did. We picked up some form of transport, hung on to the back of a lorry or something. We got to Mandalay, and we reported to the Upper Burma Battalion, who literally didn't want to know us, because we had no paybooks, we had no identification, some of us were barebody. The only proof that we were soldiers was that we had the 4-5 pistols, which were army issue. However, we persisted. They gave us shelter and food. A couple of days later, the quartermaster gave us some uniforms of sorts to wear. Then we were asked whether we could drive. We said, why are we from the armored car section? So we were sent off to a transport company, which, incidentally, my brother-in-law was a lieutenant. And we drove those Leaseland trucks, American Fords, from Mandalay, Aviation Spirit, up to Mamio, washed the truck down, stay there overnight, pick up fresh vegetables 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, drive it down to Mandalay, unload the fresh vegetables, put on Aviation Spirit, those huge 45 or 55 gallon drums, load them up a ramp with very little help, just a few of us, take this Aviation Spirit, drive it down to Mektila, and between Mandalay and Mektila we would be strafed by Zero fighters. We had no lookouts because they couldn't spare the men. And just the 5 lorry trucks of us, all 5 pals, would run the gauntlet. If we did see or hear or the Zero fighters and the bullets along the road, we would try and stop under a tree, get out of the truck and run like hell, either into the open paddy field or into nearby jungle. But this being central Burma, there was very little jungle. And then we used to bring back wounded from Mektila. And the poor chaps just had to sleep on blankets or whatever they've got in the back of our truck. And we had to drive as slowly or considerate as we could be. But bearing in mind that when we got back to Mandalay, we had to take Aviation Spirit up to Mamio. So I gather the round trip must have been 42 miles from Manly to Maymeo and about 70 miles to Mactula. So that, you work it out for yourself, that time was at a premium. Then we started taking Chinese troops down from Mandalay, down the road, as far as they wanted to go. But they were a menace, because if you left your rifle, they took your rifle. If you left your rations, they took your rations. We dare not leave the truck in case they took the truck. We didn't know who, whether we were fighting the Chinese or Japanese at that time, but they were really frightening, because they had no discipline as such.
Did they have officers with them?
They had officers with them, and the junior officers, as far as we were concerned, were just bandits. A chap sitting on a pack, he'd stand up and the pack's gone. Literally the side of the road. And you couldn't, after that, they want to kill you if you accuse them of anything like that. And of course, there were hundreds of them, a handful of us. Yes, the Chinese were frightening in that they take whatever they could lay their hands on. Because they themselves, poor chaps, had no rations, very poor uniforms. And I was told later about one rifle to every five soldiers.
How were the Burmese behaving?
The Burmese at this time were very bad indeed. They were bringing the Japs around, infiltrating with the Japs and showing them the parts and the shortest routes. And also, as I said before, they took advantage of stragglers. And killed them.
Did you have any personal contact with that type of thing?
No. But unfortunately, I had personal contact with that sort of thing with the Indian Army. Soldiers who were helping themselves to the civilians' rations, and just being
ill-disciplined.
And taking advantage of the fact that he was armed. I don't want to say too much, but there you are. So this was on the evacuation. This went right on to the borders of India, where bands of ill-disciplined Indian Army soldiers with guns took advantage of poor civilians and people unarmed to help themselves to their rations.
Jewelry
and bits and pieces.
So
I think this has been recorded. I had one or two experiences with that. And we had to send them on their way by firing over their heads and taking their guns away.
So in a way it was not surprising that Burmese civilians should retaliate against Indian soldiers.
No, it wasn't the Burmese civilian public as much as the evacuees. Their own Indian evacuees. Who were evacuating or walking to India. No, the Burmese civilians I spoke about were the actual villagers who were not moving out, but were helping to bring the Japs round to our rear. But as you know, the British Army at that time unfortunately kept the roads, and the Japs just came around them and encircled them every night without fail. Get up in the morning and you'd have to fight your way up out. They've encircled you.
What do you remember happening next to yourself
Crossing the Chinwin. There again, five of us left the main body at about Kalewa, went about 4 miles upstream, fishing, eating all the way, feeding ourselves, the villagers feeding us, I should say. Now we've come to Kachin country, where they were very friendly and helped the allies and the evacuees. And they were very poor themselves, but whatever they had, they shared with us. And we, in turn, fished and killed the odd wild boar and deer and give it to them with the ammunition and we had.
Where was this exactly?
This is on the Chinwin, north of Kalewa, Shwejin. On the bend of the river.
Yes, I can see it on the map.
All along there, you see? We must have gone about 4 or 5 miles out. We then built a raft and came down. And now, which side of the river? Kalewa. We came down the raft and we got to Shwejin, which was the main stepping-off point to march to India. At Kalewa, we reported to a transport officer, I suppose I could call him, and he asked us what we were doing, and we were moving up to India, but our unit was disbanded, the armored car unit, because our cars were left behind on the Satang, and we were on transport. He then put us on fatigues, believe it or not, burning money, notes, 100-rupee notes, 10-rupee notes, 5-rupee notes, and throwing the silver, rowing out in little sampans and dugouts with bags and bags of silver and throwing it into the Chinwin. And the most amusing part of it, the villagers were down the river with their fishing nets out trying to get as much coins as possible. And we said good luck to them. We couldn't give them the bundles of rupees and 8 anna bits and 4 anna bits and 2 anna bits. I remember just breaking this and throwing it in the river and then notes burning. And this took about 2 days. And then the officer said, I'll finish with you on your way. And then we started walking to India. And my impressions then was the hills started straight away and the rains. This must have been May, June 1942. And the rains started in April. And it just rained and rained. If it wasn't raining, there was drips from the trees, perspiration. We had no packs as such to carry our bits and pieces in. So it was Dick Whittington style, a bamboo over your shoulders, stuff tied in a blanket. But believe me, it takes your... what starts off as 5-6 pounds weighs 50 pounds after 1 hour. Chafing, honestly. You don't know how lucky it is when you have a pack that's filling. No one seemed to care then. There was absolute chaos. Your boots got clogged because they were still either repairing or making the roads at that time, I'm not quite sure, but there was no surface to them as such. And you would get, honestly, every mile or so you had to stop literally and, dig this stuff off your bayonet, dig the clay and mud that stuck to your boots. Then if a truck came along, either going up the hill or down, you had to literally go against the side of the mountain and wait there for the thing to pass. And the trucks either were taking rations or wounded and sick men. You were not allowed on that. So it just marched and marched. How long it took, I'm not quite sure. But it was an absolute nightmare, because where and how we got our food till today, I cannot remember, because there were no depots as such. It was just chaos. There was no organization. You would then often, sometimes see a staff officer in a jeep. That was the first time I ever saw a jeep drive along. Someone would ask a question, get no reply, but I really cannot remember how we got up to Temu Imphal. The villagers were very good along the way, the Nagas and the Chins. They shared whatever they had with you. We gave them whatever money we had, which was very little at them. And then when we got to Imphal, Temu, again, our little party of five were in trouble. No pay books, no identification, no certificate of inoculation. Again, the only proof was that 4 or 5 pistols, rifles we had picked up on the way. And we were using those old-fashioned bandoliers, cloth bandoliers. And then we were sent to Ranchi. Some of us were put in hospital for a day or two, just for a checkup. And I remember we were given 10 rupees each. And the first thing I went and bought was a tin of cream cracker biscuits and a tin of Red Feather brand Australian butter. I remember it so well because of the Red Feather slash. And I took this butter and cream cracker biscuits. I wasn't going to share with anybody. And I went into about 100 yards into the surrounding jungle around this camp, and I sat down and ate the lot. Then felt terribly guilty that I hadn't shared with my 4 other pals. Anyway, that night, I couldn't have much. We had to go for food. I couldn't eat much food because I'd had this tin of biscuits were that big, rows and rows of, about 3 rows of biscuits. And I felt terribly guilty. And I said to, I remember Henry Ford, his name's after the Ford Motor Company, that what I had done, he killed himself laughing because he'd done exactly the same thing, but not with cream cracker biscuits, with cheeselets. And he was bloody sick with the cheeselets. And I remember that very well. Then
how long did it take you to recover at Ranchi?
Oh, I didn't. Believe it or not, all 5 of us. I went. We were more or less compulsory into hospital. Just, I think I stayed there at night, and all of us stayed there at night. We were not run down or unfit like some of the chaps had been. Not flattering ourselves, but we treated it like cowboys and Indians sort of stuff. We were overgrown schoolboys. We were still schoolboys. And the 5 of us had stuck together. We ate together. We didn't eat together when we didn't have. But we were not skeletons. We'd lost a few pounds, but we were harder. Muscles had come out where we didn't know we had them. And no, we were not sick or sorry. Anyway, the next thing was where do we go from there? So I still till today can't remember, but we were given leave, and from leave we were told to go to Mau, where the Burma Auxiliary Force Depot was going to be established. That means the Upper Burma Battalion, the Tenasserim Battalion, the Rangoon Battalion, the Archer, the whole Auxiliary Force would go there eventually. So I then went to Calcutta. We had to change at Calcutta. And I remember, I told you my father worked for Steele Brothers. So I went to, I happened to be walking the town, and there I saw Steele Brothers and Company Limited. So I walked in, and I told them who I was, and that my father was in the shipping department, and believe it or not, they gave me 100 rupees, just off the cuff. They believed my story, and I told them I was broke, I had nothing, and they gave me 100 rupees. Whereas the army would give you a maximum of 10 rupees. I was rich now. So, first thing we do is go to Firpo's, order a slap-up meal, and eat, the five of us. It was really fantastic. I remember Mulugatani soup. We had bowls and bowls of this to start off with, and then we went on to the main dish, which curry rice, of course. Everything. Firpo's was fairly well known for its good food in Calcutta. It was one of the top-class restaurants. We then made our way, and no, we then split up because we had to go and leave, and I went up to Sabatu in the Simla Hills, where my mother and sister were in a refugee camp for Burma folk. English, Anglo-Burmese, Burmese, Karen, everybody. They had taken over the British barracks up there and made into cubicles for families, and the single people stayed in, and they had a station staff officer and a provost sergeant and about six men, and they looked after the families and sorted out and tried to trace relatives who had been on the march. They were in touch with the various convents along the way, and I know the Loretta Convent in Calcutta did quite a lot of good work trying to trace things. And then they had a few camps of these dotted over the countryside in India. I know there's Coimbatore and up in the south. However, this was in Sabatu in the Simla Hills. They had one in Dagshai across the road in the Simla Hills. Beautiful place. And they did all they could, canteen, dancing every second night, tombola in those days, or housey-housey they called it. And everybody seemed fairly happy. Of course, those who hadn't, I saw there's some English people over there whose husband had been captured in Singapore, and they had got no news of that. That was sad. I then had my, I think it was 2 weeks or 3 weeks leave, and I went down to Mao, reported for duty, and re-equipped with uniforms and pay. Oh, sorry, I had a temporary pay book by now, issued in Ranchi. And the depot was then commanded by Colonel Parrott, I remember. The adjutant was Jimmy Hunter. The second command was a Major Oppenheimer. All territorial arm, all auxiliary force officers. And now they were sorting us out. The gunners had field gunners had field gun training. AKAC had their 3.7. What are the big anti-aircraft, 3-inch or 3.7, I'm not quite sure. And but we from the armored cars and the infantry, Rangoon Battalion, they tried to absorb us as into the artillery. I was put on the predictors. But in the meantime, being ambitious, I applied for a commission. Went before the Colonel Parrott. He said, "What makes you think you can be an officer?" "No, let me tell you. All my friends were being promoted to lance corporals and corporals. And then an order came out, because of auxiliary force, we didn't have the discipline the regular army had. Sergeants wouldn't walk out with corporals and lance corporals. Corporals and lance corporals wouldn't walk out with privates. But in the camp itself, it was okay, but not out in town." So I went to Lieutenant Carlton, who was my platoon commander or company commander, I forget. I said, "Look, give me a stripe." He said, "No, you're too irresponsible. You're always laughing, you're always happy." I said, "Laughing and happy is not being irresponsible." But if that's the case, I said, I want to be an officer. I'm ambitious, I want to be an officer. He said, what makes you think you make a good officer? I said, look, I've been on sentry duty outside the officer's mess. And the way you chaps behave after a few drinks, over the sticks, jumping, I said, I make a damn good officer. He killed himself laughing. And he asked me what school I went to, so I said I went to the Dyson Boys High School. It was Dyson English Boys High School, because 50% were you English boys who were out there in school. And he said, okay. He chatted to me what education I had. So he got me the papers for applying for a commission. So I said, you better get me 2 or 3 copies, because I'm sure to make a mistake. Because if you remember at that time, there were fountain pens, and the paper was such bad quality that it used to smudge. And I remember I had a relief nib pen with the Swan ink, and you had to write. And there were no such things as biros and lees. So he did. He got me 2 copies, of which the first copy I made a terrible mess of, and the second copy I filled in. On the barrack room box, and all the chaps ragging me, saying, oh, Hogan. And I had on a pair of pajamas. It was officer's training pajamas. This was the money I got from the Steel Brothers. I managed to buy myself a really posh pair of silk pajamas from a Chinese salesman. And this was my officer's pajamas. And they, of course, ragged me. And quite a few thought you'd never stand a chance of going up. You're too irresponsible. And the long and the short of it, I went up and I got an A for Land Forces. And I hadn't got back to my unit when I was posted to the Dehradun Officers Training Center at Dehradun. And I went through that, having to study very hard, work very hard at it, because I was determined that I would get my commission. Otherwise, that meant going back as a private. And if what Lieutenant Carlton said was true, I'd finish the war as a private. So I did fairly well. I passed out. I carried the Academy colors at the passing out parade. And Leslie Previtt carried the Royal Standard. Had it been pre-war, there would be a sword of honor or something involved, or some prize. But being a wartime course of 6 months. And I was commissioned second lieutenant into the 2nd Battalion of the Burma Rifles, my first choice. My second choice was the Burma Regiment, which was Gurkhas, and my third choice was Gurkha Rifles. I was chosen for Burma Rifles because of my knowledge of Burmese and being a Karen. And I reported at a jungle training camp in Chansey to the adjutant, Captain Pam Heal, who unfortunately died this last September. And